a happy new year.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has approved the deployment of an extra brigade of the elite 82nd Airborne Division to Iraq in January and extended that of another brigade to maintain combat power as other forces are being swapped out. The deployment will increase the total size of the U.S. force by a couple of thousand troops over a three-month period in which the entire force is being replaced with fresh units. General John Abizaid, commander of the U.S. Central Command, asked for the deployment of the 82nd Airborne's 1st Brigade after deciding that an infantry brigade of the Washington National Guard that was supposed to deploy in January needed more training. The chairman of a federal commission looking into the September 11th attacks said Thursday that mistakes over many years left the United States vulnerable to such an attack, but he resisted pinning blame on either of the last two presidential teams. Chairman Thomas Kane said the 10-member commission on terrorist attacks upon the United States has not decided whether to ask former President Clinton or President Bush to testify. He also said that any conclusions about the performance of high-level officials will be reached when the commission has finished its work. Kane sought to clarify remarks attributed to him in a CBS News report that aired Wednesday. David Kaye, head of the U.S. effort to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, has told administration officials that he plans to leave before the Iraq Survey Group's work is completed and could depart before February. The move comes as more of Kaye's staff has been diverted from the weapons hunt to help search for Iraqi insurgents, and at a time when expectations remain low that any weaponry will be discovered. When Kaye accepted the job in June, he expected to quickly find the expansive evidence that the administration had claimed as its primary reason for going to war. Rather, Kaye's preliminary report in October said the group so far had only discovered that Iraq was working to acquire chemical and biological weapons, had missile programs under various stages of development, and possessed only a rudimentary nuclear program. Two officials confirmed that Kaye is planning on leaving early and said the question remaining is how soon. More news after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
The Nielsen television ratings found that more people watched The Simple Life on Fox than watched George W. Bush's ABC News interview just a couple of days after Saddam Hussein was caught. The Bush interview was seen by 11 million people, while the Fox show was seen by nearly 12 million. That's about the same size as the audience who watched the CBS drama starring Mark Harmon. Bush did manage to beat out a rerun of Whoopi Goldberg's show on NBC. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Wish I could watch some TV. If only my couch wasn't 43,000 feet away.
When you're in bed with the flu, the smallest distance can seem impossible.
If only the medicine cabinet wasn't way across the state line.
If only. If only you had the strength. You need Advil Flu and Body Ache. The power of Advil so nothing works harder on body aches, headaches, and fever. Plus a hard-working decongestant. Makes having the flu a lot more comfortable.
Now, if only I had a plasma TV.
Fight the flu with Advil Flu and Body Ache. Use as directed.
Looking for a real estate bargain? John Schiffler, who lives in the pricey San Francisco area, has a terrific deal for you. He's got a place for sale that's located along historic Millionaire's Row, is built of gorgeous granite, is in pristine condition, is on a tree-lined boulevard in a quiet neighborhood with spectacular views of Golden Gate Bridge, and get this, the price is only $250,000. The only catch is that you have to move in with Schiffler's family, his dead family. He has hung a for sale sign on his family's tomb, a sturdy mausoleum in one of the most prestigious cemeteries in the Bay Area. Mountain View Cemetery, first laid out in 1863 by one of America's most eminent landscapers, Frederick Law Olmsted, is the final resting place of railroad barons, steel magnates, chocolate tycoons, and other people of wealth. including Mr. Schiffler's family. The mausoleum presently contains the remains of his grandfather, mother, father, and two aunts. But alas, old wealth doesn't always last. John, 63, has recently divorced and remarried, so he now finds himself in need of income. One could get a job, of course, but that's not real money. Besides, working for a living is really a bit tacky. So he's put the old home place up for sale. What's to come of the deceased who's presently in residence? Not to worry, for Schiffler promises to clean them out, saying he'd gladly reinter them down the road. Quote, "It's not as if I'd be casting their bones and ashes to the fall winds." He says he can do what he wants with the mausoleum, including, he threatens, dividing it up into condo crypts and selling them on a layaway plan. This is Jim Hightower saying, John claims to love his dearly departed family, but he asks, do we create stability for the dead at the expense of the living? You can't let ancestry get in the way of cash, can you?
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector!
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, peace, freedom, and the American way. This is Tom Hartman broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border on the IE America Radio Network, on Sirius Satellite Radio System, Stream 145, and around the planet on radiopower.org, live365.com, ieamericaradio.com, and with archives at White Rose Society. You can find links to it all at tomhartman.com, including links to our chat room, which is up, live, running, and already full of folks. Oh, some interesting conversation going on. I'm not going to tell you about the detail. Occasionally it gets a little X-rated, but usually not. Usually it's 99% of the time fascinating stuff. We have to begin. Actually, I want to just, it's Friday. You know, you have a certain amount of license, I suppose, on Friday. I want to start out with our conservative alert for the day. This William Haynes II. He's I'll tell you his ultimate fate in just a moment. But Haynes currently serves as the military's top lawyer, and there was a case where there was an island in the Pacific, and the Army was bombing this island. And some conservationists, local conservationists, sued to protect an endangered species or a migratory bird. And Haynes's legal brief, he actually argued this before the court. His legal brief said that there was actually a benefit from the military's killing of birds because it helps make some species more rare. And now quoting from his legal brief, quote, "Bird watchers get more enjoyment spotting a rare bird than they do spotting a common one," end quote. Now, the other side of this, he also made the argument that the bombing was good for the birds because it kept the islands free of humans, so, which would include bird watchers. So, it's, on the one hand, yes, it's good to kill those birds because then the bird watchers find it more fascinating because they can't identify, you know. And on the other hand, no, we're not going to. Well, the judge said, and I quote from the ruling, "There is absolutely no support in the law for the view that environmentalists should get enjoyment out of the destruction of natural resources. Further, the court hopes that the federal government will refrain from making or adopting such frivolous arguments in the future." Now, what happened to this guy, William Haynes II, this lawyer who argued that it's appropriate for the Army to kill an endangered species of bird because it makes it even more rare, which will make bird watchers happy when they spot one? He has now been nominated for a seat on the 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. His nomination is pending in the Senate. Our conservative alert for the day, William Haynes II. And you wonder why the Democrats sometimes scratch their head when the Bush administration sends these nominations up to them. Will freedom and individual liberties recover from the Bush monarchy? This, of course, things that in the, this whole spectrum of things that are coming out of the what is sometimes called the war on terror. We really have two wars going on here. Either one of them of arguable merit. There is the war on terror, which most appropriately should be a worldwide police action against a criminal organized crime outfit run by Osama bin Laden. And then there is the war on Iraq, which has nothing to do with Osama bin Laden. And both of them seem to be producing a war on civil liberties in the United States. Yesterday, we saw the Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Now, see, these are the same appeals courts that this guy that I just told you about has been nominated for by this administration. And this was a 2-1 ruling. It really illustrates the importance of these judicial nominees. It's why the Federalist Society, which was started back in the early 80s with major corporate funding, and to this day receives major corporate funding. The Federalist Society, the vast majority, which has infiltrated our legal schools across the United States, the Federalist Society judges are the, by and large, the ones who are being nominated by the Bush Society, by the Bush administration. The Federalist Society is, well, we did a program on them 6 months ago or so. But in broad stroke, the leading shock force of the conservative agenda to take over, the conservative movement, of the con movement to take over the judiciary. You know, you have conservatives in the White House, you have conservatives who have seized control of the House and Senate, and they also want to take control of the judiciary. Now, this is not without precedent. Franklin Roosevelt did the same thing, only not in such an organized fashion, and largely just with the Supreme Court, but back in the 1940s, the 1930s. And every president, of course, tries to put in judicial nominees with whom he agrees. Bill Clinton tried, and many of his nominees, far more than the number that have been held up by the Republicans, were blocked right up to the bitter end. But in any case, this illustrates the importance of our considering who is being nominated for these courts, because this court ruled 2-1. Against the government, against George Bush, the second, or against the Bush administration. Today, a statement from John Podesta, who is the head of the Center for American Progress. He said, today the Court of Appeals, this yesterday, of course, for the Second Circuit, ruled that the president, acting alone, lacks the power to detain an American citizen seized on U.S. soil outside a zone of combat. See, the administration was arguing that an American seized on American soil could be classified as an enemy combatant and therefore thrown in the slammer until the time of combat was over, and then at that point might be subject to some sort of legal process. The sort of precedent that they pulled out of the hat for this thing was two Americans who had gone over to Germany, had spent time in Germany. They were Nazi sympathizers who had come back to the United States with sabotage on their minds, who were arrested and who were held as enemy combatants, designated as such. And certainly, you know, it makes a certain amount of sense to say if somebody has changed sides in a war, then they have a different status than the everyday person. That certainly makes sense. However, the two Germans were subject to judicial process. They had attorneys. They had their day in court. They were convicted by a judge in public, and they were executed. Okay. So it was a straightforward process, but, this guy, and they were captured when the United States was in a declared war. Congress had declared a war. There is no congressional proclamation of war in existence right now. We are not in a state of war. We have, now, frankly, I don't blame George Bush for this. I blame the United States Congress. We have not been at war in the United States since the end of hostilities in World War II. Vietnam was not a war. Korea was not a war. And this thing now in Iraq and Afghanistan and every place else on the planet, according to George W. Bush, where people are evil, is not a war, legally. And in my opinion, Congress has just terribly passed the buck in all three of these cases by not declaring explicitly a war. And this, with the Korean conflict, this got MacArthur's nose out of joint big time. I mean, he said, if you're going to have a war, have a war. He wanted to take the thing all the way to China, conquer North Korea. And Truman said no. Fired him. Was it Truman? Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Or Eisenhower. I'm mixing up my time zones. Anyway, the president said no. And that was the end of that. I'm almost certain it was Truman. Anyhow, we'll have to go back on that. But the point is that neither the Korean conflict, which I was too young to remember, that's why I'm... the Vietnam conflict, which I remember well, nor this current thing were actually wars. And so whatever justification in the United States code that there may exist for the president to declare somebody an enemy combatant is predicated on there being a declaration of war. And in fact, given the fact that George W. Bush has said in public, in speeches, in statements, in news conferences, has said repeatedly that the, quote, war on terror, end quote, may not end in his lifetime. That this may be a war that will go on for generations. Certainly for many years to come. It's an open-ended thing. It's like the war on drugs. It's like the war on poverty. Given the fact that that's the status of this thing, explicitly, it's outrageous to say that therefore anybody captured in the context of this thing has extrajudicial status. It no longer has the protections of the law until the war is over. We are not engaged in World War II or even World War III. We have been attacked by a gang of criminals using religion as their pretense, and we must respond to them. In addition to that, we have illegally, in violation of the United Nations Charter and in violation of the policies of the United States from 227 years ago up until last year, attacked a nation that has not first attacked us. And we have drawn the enmity and wrath of the world. More people today around the world say they think George Bush is a threat to peace than say Osama bin Laden is a threat to peace. A sad thing. Not a sentiment that I agree with, but a sad sentiment nonetheless. And this is the kind of thing that promotes it, is throwing people in jail and saying, well, we'll let you out when the war is over, wink, wink, and then at the same time saying, this war may never be over in my lifetime. And by the way, while you're in there, you can't see a lawyer. You can't even see a lawyer. You can't call your family. Nothing. Well, the Second Court of Appeals has said, no, sorry, Mr. Bush, you can't do that. There's this thing called the United States Constitution. And we'll get back to that in just a second. You're in the Democracy Zone. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
I want everyone to listen up and understand clearly. We need some good weekday programming ideas. I don't know why no one is writing this down.
Oh, geez. Oops.
We need some good weekday programming ideas that will appeal to all angles and opinions of all listeners. Any ideas? Johnson.
Oh, you said the wrong name.
It's Jameson, sir.
Jackson, Johnson, Jasper, whatever.
Maybe we can pick up Limbaugh and convince him to move more to the middle.
That's good. Get out of my office. Yeah, get out. Jeez. You're an idiot.
Sure.
Spicoli.
It's Smith, sir.
Yeah. Give me something good.
Why don't we just have some shows that will appeal to everyone's opinion? It'll make the listener base more diverse and make for a good show.
A talk show that everyone will listen to because their opinions will be supported by other listeners and welcomed by the show host. That's brilliant. Good job, Swanson.
You're on the ball.
Everyone take this next holiday off.
Wait, someone has to work. Doug Steffen's live.
Oh,
come on.
Best in progressive talk radio, weekdays, on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Suzanne Cowardy.
I'm El Bracciotti, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey!
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud!
This is Steve Damschreiter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah!
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family cheers. Have
a happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus!
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Shake it up. Shake it up. Shake it up.
Yeah, shaking up a democracy here. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Uncommon sense from the radical middle. It's 25 minutes after the hour. And we have now appearing Laura Bush. Yes, indeed. Whoop. Oh, arg! There we go again. For some reason. Oh. Sorry about that.
30.
When I was just a little girl, I knew I'd marry a president. I had a song then going through my head, no idea what it meant. Get Saddam, Saddam.
And they did.
I felt that would be the key.
And was it?
To national unity. Get Saddam, Saddam.
Well, it would be nice.
We beat him not just once, but twice. Both times he slipped through our little hands. But my husband takes after my father-in-law. He's such a patient man.
Get Saddam, Saddam. We'll find him somewhere, someday.
And we have.
Maybe he'll just go away. Get Saddam, Saddam.
Well done.
Sometimes when he's got football on, I say, now, honey, where can he be?
He'll turn up. Just leave me alone, honey, when I'm watching the TV.
Get Saddam, Saddam. It used to just be assumed that SOB he was doomed. Get Saddam, Saddam. Is it true? We'll see. It's a mystery. It's so awfully weird how he disappeared. Get Saddam, Saddam.
Yes, commemorating the surrender of Saddam Hussein. Laura Pickles Bush from the BlueCanyonProductions.com website, from Jim Turr's brilliant, brilliant place. And which raises the question, is the war, you know, if we're going to put Jose Padilla, an American citizen, the guy who flew over to Pakistan, may well have been planning on doing something nasty in the United States. We don't know. Because there have been no charges filed against him, none. We do know that he was surfing websites while in the United States that talked about dirty bombs, how to make dirty bombs, and on the basis of that and the fact that he was in Pakistan, as far as we can tell, he has been arrested. And now, and held without a lawyer for what, 18 months now? Something like this? Some considerable period of time. Now, the Justice Department says we are not going to go along with this. This court has said that American citizens, even though we've gotten Saddam, I mean, you know, how do you define when a war on a technique is over? It's one of the folks in our chat room pointed out so eloquently. Yeah. It's like the war on drugs. When is the war on drugs won? How do you know? When is the war on a technique? When is the war on tanks over? Well, when there's no more tanks. The war on terrorism, how do you define it? How do you know when you give people lawyers? This is Tom Hartman on the iAmerica Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back. By the way, at the 1 o'clock segment, we're going to have Bernie Sanders on. Stick around for that, too. Hang on. We'll be back.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
This is Kim Kasnick, office manager for IE America Radio Network, hoping you and your family have a happy holiday.
The upstream migration of some salmon is a spectacular event that's become tainted by chemicals. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every fall, millions of salmon leave the ocean to swim up rivers in the Pacific Northwest. The fish fight strong currents and hurl themselves over rapids to reach the lakes where they spawn. They die after laying their eggs. It's an exciting time for anglers to be fishing, and it's a feast for a lot of bears and eagles. But new research casts a shadow over this event. The salmon often carry toxic chemicals with them on their journey upstream. Jules Blaise is an environmental chemist at the University of Ottawa, and he studies the movement of chemicals from the ocean into freshwater rivers and lakes. Blaise says ocean water has low concentrations of industrial pollutants, and those chemicals accumulate in the tissues of marine creatures. Salmon consume tiny amounts of PCBs and dioxins every day, and they store those chemicals in their fat. By the time they're adults, salmon can have PCBs in their fat at levels 2,000 times higher than the seawater around them. Blaise says some scenic lakes in the Pacific Northwest receive millions of salmon each year. That many fish can bring in a hefty load of toxic chemicals.
When we looked at how much PCBs these salmon were actually carrying, we were quite surprised to see that in the case of some lakes that receive millions of salmon, the amount of PCBs released by salmon is comparable to the amount of PCBs released by a hazardous waste incinerator. So it's as though you had taken a waste incinerator and placed it on that remote site.
Blaise says most of the chemicals are released directly into lake sediments when the salmon die and decay, but bears and eagles also absorb some of these chemicals when they eat the fish, and Blaise plans to do more research to see how they're affected. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, your animalological super information highway, helping you with your pets. Every Sunday night, we take your calls, help your pets, always give away some prizes, and talk to celebrities, like from It Is Enough, Dick Van Patten.
I've been listening to your show. It's fascinating. It's very interesting.
We're nuts, aren't we?
To see why people would call you up, you really know what you're talking about. It's terrific. Very, very informative.
Uh-oh, we got him on the wrong channel.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it. Stop surfing and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live.
You know you did, you know you did, you know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception. Will freedom and individual liberties recover from the Bush monarchy? Well, we had two out of three judges this week say that the Bush administration was not a monarchy and that George Bush couldn't unilaterally lock up an American citizen without charges and without access to a lawyer. They said there is this little thing called the Constitution of the United States. In fact, if you read Amendment 6... it says, in all prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted by the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. End of end period. You know, and that's it. That's the Sixth Amendment of the United States. And It doesn't say unless the president says otherwise. It does, you know. In fact, you know, I mean, the founders wrote at length about how important it was to constrain the executive branch, lest we end up with an imperious presidency. That's why only Congress has the power to declare war. Only Congress. And it's terribly wrong, in my opinion, that Congress has been giving up this power over the last, five decades, repeatedly. And of course, it wasn't, the Spanish-American War, I don't believe, was ever a declared war. So it's not the first time. But will freedom and individual liberties survive the Bush monarchy? By the way, I mentioned before the break, Bernie Sanders, we're going to have brunch with Bernie, our occasional Friday afternoon segment. It'll be on from the top of the hour, coming up in 25 minutes, for an hour. Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman, will be on, the only independent member of the United States Congress. And Bernie loves to take calls from listeners. So if you have something that you want to ask Congressman Sanders, be thinking about it now. He'll be on the line in 25 minutes. Anyhow, yesterday, administration officials gave no sign they would retreat from the approach. A senior Justice Department official said, actually, these rulings are an aberration. The administration has been upheld time and time again. So it looks like they're going to take this thing to the Supreme Court. That'll be interesting. Also, there was in San Francisco another case, another 2-1 ruling on Thursday about the detention of 660. Boy, if there was 666, John Ashcroft would go running out of the Justice Department building with his hands in the air. With the detention of 660 citizens at Guantanamo Bay without the protection of the American legal system was unconstitutional. This court in San Francisco is a federal appeals court, Ninth District Court. The one that ruled back in 1885 that corporations are persons when the Republicans controlled the court. I'm not sure the makeup of the judges in the San Francisco court, but 2-1, they ruled that it was not only illegal to detain people at Guantanamo Bay without access to an attorney under American law, but that it was also illegal under international law. So 1-800-TALK-YES, our number if you have thoughts on these issues. We find here, on it goes. I mean, just this absolute contempt for the Constitution of the United States shown by this administration. The Associated Press reports yesterday, military authorities searched offices of lawyers who represent an Air Force interpreter charged with spying at the Guantanamo Bay, Cuba prison, one of the man's lawyers said yesterday. Air Force agents burst into a room where this guy was meeting with his lawyers on Wednesday. His lawyer says this conduct by the government is unprecedented and can only be interpreted as a conscious disregard of the attorney-client relationship. So on the one hand, they're saying to folks, the folks at Guantanamo Bay, you cannot talk to a lawyer. You can't talk to anybody. Solitary confinement, lockdown, interrogate, that's it. Sorry. Nothing. And then when a lawyer comes in to represent an interpreter, see, this lawyer is not representing one of the Guantanamo Bay detainees. He's representing an American soldier. This is the lawyer for an American citizen who is a soldier. And this administration sent their minions in to tear apart his office. The administration is also engaging in some revision of history. In yesterday's Washington Post, I assume you saw the article or you heard about it. It was on the news last night. I thought it was interesting. Andrew Natsios, you may recall back some time ago, I don't have the exact date, but it was just a few months ago, went before Congress and said that U.S. taxpayers would not have to pay more than $1.7 billion to reconstruct Iraq. He said, that's it. I mean, this was back when the administration figured that even though we had told the rest of the world to take a flying leap even though we had defied the United Nations, which had said that Saddam, you better disarm or else. The or else provision of Resolution 1441 could only go into effect, if you actually read the resolution, could only go into effect when Hans Blix certified that there was a high probability of there being weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And Hans Blix had gone out of his way not only to not certify it, but to say that every indication was that there were none. And he is now on the record, as of just this last week, as saying he is certain there are none. Or relatively certain. As certain as one can be, having spent, months and months in Iraq searching thousands of locations with hundreds of people. And, of course, David Kaye seems to be coming to the same conclusion. He let us know yesterday that he's going to quit his job in February. So anyhow, this guy, Andrew Natsios, goes before Congress on behalf of the Agency for International Development, our federal agency that's supposed to administer these funds, and says, yeah, we're only going to need $1.7 billion. Don't worry. And, of course, his testimony was on a government website, as it should be. It was, he's paid by your and my tax dollars. And the government websites are there to communicate to us what our government is up to. But apparently the Bush administration found it rather inconvenient to have history on the Internet. So they deleted his testimony. Just went in and deleted it. This was discovered yesterday. But about a month ago, they did something similar. On May 1st, the headline on the White House website said, President Bush announces combat operations in Iraq have ended. That's what the headline said on the White House website. Said that for about a month. And then the body bags kept coming back. And so they went in there and they deleted the word major, or they inserted the word major. In other words, they changed their statement from President Bush announces combat operations in Iraq have ended. That's what the White House website said. To President Bush announces major combat operations in Iraq have ended. Have you noticed how whenever there's a con being interviewed on TV, or particularly a neocon, and somebody will say, well, back when the president announced the combat was over, and they always correct him, they say, no, he announced that major combat was over. The revision of history. Not just the revision of history, the revision of the website to put forward, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, has deleted fact sheets from its website about condoms. Why? Because there is a constituency that George Bush is expecting to help deliver him into the White House in 2004 that doesn't believe that you should have birth control. I mean, this is not anti-abortion, folks. This is anti-birth control, folks. These are folks who want to take us back to 1956 when it was against the law. It was against the law for people to use birth control devices in the privacy of their own homes. And it's not a small faction. Interestingly, by the way, what country in Europe has the highest rate on a per capita basis of the purchase and use of birth control devices and technologies? Birth control pills, condoms, all these things. Italy. I always found that interesting. And instead, the CDC has taken down all the information on condoms and instead has put up a page promoting abstinence. Just say no. Now, abstinence is a marvelous thing. I'm entirely in favor of it. It is something I have preached to my children as they grew up, and I think every parent should. But if consenting adults want to go on the CDC and find out the authoritative take on what is a condom, how does it work, or teenagers for that matter, it's important, I think, for people to learn these things, don't you? I mean, isn't this important to understand what works, what doesn't, how it works, what's going on? Stephen Allgood, who directs the Project on Government Secrecy at the Federation of American Scientists, said, this smells like an attempt to revise the record, not just to withhold information, but to alter the historical record in a self-interested way. They've also eliminated the website on the National Cancer Institute, which quoted scientific studies showing that there was no relationship between abortion and breast cancer. It was by Dana Milbach, Washington Post staff writer's article yesterday in the Washington Post. And why? What was the rationale given for deleting these things? Why did the administration say that they took down from the government website the testimony, for example, of Andrew Natsios? Well, they said because his testimony was recorded by ABC News. It was an ABC News clip that they had on the website. Because his testimony was recorded by ABC News, according to Lejeune Hall, a USAID spokeswoman, there was going to be a cost. That's why they're not there. In other words, ABC was charging royalties to the government to have this clip on the website. Well, that makes sense. I mean, do we want our tax dollars paying for a clip of a historical bit of information, but, you know, is it an important one? Certainly not from the point of view of this administration, and probably not so much anyway. But I think for the historical record, actually, it's pretty interesting to chronicle how things have happened, how the stories have changed, what's gone on. But anyhow, the bottom line is there is no cost. ABC News spokesman Jeffrey Schneider said, "We wouldn't charge for that. We have no trouble with a government agency linking to one of our interviews, and we are unaware of anybody from ABC making any request that anything be removed." So, turns out, they lied to us. Not the first time. Now, here's something that really concerns me. The American Prospect magazine is reporting this month that $3 billion out of the $87 billion that we just appropriated for Iraq, that $3 billion of that has had this cloak of secrecy draped over it. And everybody's been wondering, you know, what's that $3 billion for? It's leaking out now. What three of the $87 billion is for? Now, $3 billion, keep in mind, is a lot of money. The $3 billion is to organize death squads in Iraq, like we helped organize in Central America. Remember the right-wing death squads? Ollie North was helping them out. The Reagan administration funding them, the Ford administration funding them. Jimmy Carter tried to put a stop to it. Big problem. Well, it turns out the secret, it's called Phoenix Rising, because we had a program like this in Vietnam. LBJ was running that one. Project Phoenix, where we were, it was a secret off-the-shelf program run by the CIA where we would send in assassination teams and find people that we thought were evildoers, to use a religious phrase, and execute them. No trial, no jury, no court, no arrest. And in many cases, not just them, but their entire families and any witnesses. And many suggest have suggested over the years that things like the My Lai massacre and the others that have been alleged over the years, and some that have been very well documented, were the consequence of Operation Phoenix. They weren't Operation Phoenix. But the soldiers saw these special ops guys going in and just, you know, wiping out a village or killing people with authority. And they thought, well, you know, we can do that too. So now we see this $3 billion in new funds, quote, will go toward the creation of a paramilitary unit manned by militiamen to lead, will lead to a wave of extrajudicial killings. Vincent Canestrano, the former CIA chief of counterterrorism, says they're clearly cooking up joint teams to do Phoenix-like things like they did in Vietnam. And this is being run apparently out of Dick Cheney's office. And much of the money is going to go to restive tribal sheikhs, just like in South America. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights, taking your calls, talking to celebrities like Raven Simone from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Doolittle movies. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have 2 chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out. So he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Therese Doolittle, who talks to the animals. You don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk on the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Mola Show.
Now in Sacramento, there's Conan the Groper promising he's changed.
Have behaved badly sometimes. Yes, it is true that I was on rowdy movie sets. And I have done things that were not right, which I thought then was playful. But now I recognize that I have offended people.
I thought I was being playful. Just because I'd grabbed their breast, I thought I was playful. Kathy's laughing at my Schwarzenegger. I'm sorry, I can't do it. All right, you do it.
I've groped and molested women in the past, but if you elect me, I promise I'll never do it again, because you know powerful politicians never abuse their power for sex.
Okay.
And that's how it's done.
Okay.
Hello, cutie pie. Your clothes, give them to me. Now. Come on.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There's a wondrous sight and a joyful sound every Christmas Eve in a western town. Gather up the kids, all the friends and family. There's a holly's hung and the candles bright. They're tuning up a fiddle on a moonlit.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Sunday. Hey, did you notice Sunday is going to be the winter solstice? It'll happen at 11 o'clock at night. The winter solstice, the 21st, of course, being the shortest day of the year. When I lived in Germany, I heard this story that the old, they characterized them as the Germanic chiefs or shaman. And this probably happened all over Northern Europe. But that the days would get shorter and shorter and shorter throughout the year. And the people would get really worried that the sun was going to go away. And so on the shortest day of the year, and the shamans or the kings or the priests or whatever they called them back then, they had these calendar stones, you know, like Stonehenge kind of things. They knew when the solstice was coming. They were actually very sophisticated astronomers and mathematicians in some ways. And so on the shortest day of the year, what they knew, what the priest knew to be the shortest day of the year, the people were just scared. You know, hey, the sun is going away. It's getting lower and lower in the sky. The days are getting shorter and shorter. It's getting colder and colder. And so the priest would go up to the top of the highest hill he could find and find the biggest pine tree he could find, because pine trees are full of a resin that will actually burn. You can catch a pine tree on fire, and they burn really well even when they're green. And he would light that sucker on fire, burn that great big pine tree at the top of that hill as a way of reigniting the sun. And the next day, you know, with a great pomp and ceremony, and the next day the people would notice that the sun was there a little bit longer and it was a little higher in the horizon. And the day after that, it was a little higher on the horizon, and it was a little bit longer. And the days were getting longer and longer, and they'd all look at the priest and go, "He did it again!" And thus we have Christmas trees. That was a fascinating story. Anyhow, Brunch with Bernie Sanders coming up next. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense in the radical middle. Stay tuned. We'll be back on the other side of the news.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those bands in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Mike Molloy is rational, and you know, I mean, whatever.
You want
it's
me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate
not
me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why not
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof liberal.
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
Mike Malloy Show weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. David Kaye, head of the U.S. effort to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, has told administration officials that he plans to leave before the Iraq survey group's work is completed and could depart before February. The move comes as more of Kaye's staff has been diverted from the weapons hunt to help search for Iraqi insurgents, and at a time when expectations remain low that any weaponry will be discovered. When Kaye accepted the job in June, he expected to quickly find the expansive evidence that the administration had claimed as its primary reason for going to war. Rather, Kaye's preliminary report in October said the group so far had only discovered that Iraq was working to acquire chemical and biological weapons, had missile programs under various stages of development, and possessed only a rudimentary nuclear program. Two officials confirmed that Kaye is planning on leaving early and said the question remaining is how soon. Iraq's U.S. Administrator Paul Bremer escaped unharmed when his convoy hit an explosive device and came under fire in Baghdad on December 6th, NBC News reported on Thursday. In an incident not previously disclosed, NBC said that Bremer was returning from the Baghdad airport when his convoy ran into an explosive device and his personal armed vehicle took small arms fire. The incident, which occurred on the same day U.S. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld arrived in Baghdad, was not reported to the press by Bremer's Coalition Provisional Authority, the report said. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has approved the deployment of an extra brigade of the elite 82nd Airborne Division to Iraq in January and extended that of another brigade to maintain combat power as other forces are being swapped out. The deployment will increase the total size of the U.S. force by a couple of thousand troops over a three-month period in which the entire force is being replaced with fresh units. General John Abizaid, commander of the U.S. Central Command, asked for the deployment of the 82nd Airborne's 1st Brigade after deciding that an infantry brigade of the Washington National Guard that was supposed to deploy in January needed more training. More IE America Network news after this.
Our national parks have always been there for us, standing as silent reminders of who we are and what it means to be an American. They are full of history, of memories, of majesty. But now these great American treasures need our help. I'm Richard Dreyfuss, asking you to help preserve America's national parks. Visit AmericansForNationalParks.org today, because there's just too much to lose.
This is a public service announcement from Americans for National Parks and this radio station.
Latvian police said a drunk picked up with around twice the blood level alcohol considered deadly had probably set a world record but would wake with a hangover to match. The unidentified middle-aged man was unconscious but stable after a blood test showed 7.22 parts per million of alcohol. The hospital's emergency ward head told reporters there was no record of anybody ever having survived such a dose. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Looking for a real estate bargain? John Schiffler, who lives in the pricey San Francisco area, has a terrific deal for you. He's got a place for sale that's located along historic Millionaire's Row, is built of gorgeous granite, is in pristine condition, is on a tree-lined boulevard in a quiet neighborhood with spectacular views of Golden Gate Bridge, and get this, the price is only $250,000. The only catch is that you have to move in with Schiffler's family, his dead family. He has hung a for sale sign on his family's tomb, a sturdy mausoleum in one of the most prestigious cemeteries in the Bay Area. Mountain View Cemetery, first laid out in 1863 by one of America's most eminent landscapers, Frederick Law Olmsted, is the final resting place of railroad barons, steel magnates, chocolate tycoons, and other people of wealth, including Mr. Schiffler's family. The mausoleum presently contains the remains of his grandfather, mother, father, and two aunts. But alas, old wealth doesn't always last. John, 63, has recently divorced and remarried, so he now finds himself in need of income. One could get a job, of course, but that's not real money. Besides, working for a living is really a bit tacky. So he's put the old home place up for sale. What's to come of the deceased who's presently in residence? Not to worry, for Schiffler promises to clean them out, saying he'd gladly reinter them down the road. Quote, it's not as if I'd be casting their bones and ashes to the fall winds. He says he can do what he wants with the mausoleum, including, he threatens, dividing it up into condo crypts and selling them on a layaway plan. This is Jim Hightower saying, John claims to love his dearly departed family, but he asks, do we create stability for the dead at the expense of the living? You can't let ancestry get in the way of cash, can you?
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
Drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and it is Friday afternoon, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, the second hour of our program, and time for our Friday feature, Brunch with Bernie. In 1991, Bernie Sanders became the first independent congressman elected in 40 years. He has since been reelected five times. He is the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives, and although Bernie Sanders is my congressman here as a citizen of the state of Vermont, I think of him also as America's congressman, since he's the only independent in the House of Representatives. Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Tom, it's really good to be with you.
It is so nice to have you here. Rather than starting out with a topic, we've got a couple of things that I'd like to talk about at some point here, but I'm wondering what's on your mind. What's happening in Washington, D.C., or not happening, or what do you see happening in the nation that you think is...
Obviously, Congress is not in session right now, but I think the issue of the day, and we have got to force discussion on this, because left alone, the corporate media is not going to do it. Left alone, the President of the United States is not going to do it. Most of our political leaders are not going to do it. But the real issue that faces tens and tens of millions of Americans has to do with the shrinking of the middle class. The yes. fact that the average person is working longer hours for lower wages, the fact that we are losing millions of decent-paying manufacturing jobs, jobs that are going to China, to India, to Mexico, or wherever, and the new jobs that are being created are often low wage with minimal benefits. You know, Tom, it's an interesting question. If you go out and you talk to people and you say, well, are you doing better than you used to? People will say, no, I'm working longer hours, my wages, my benefits are worse. How often do you hear that issue being discussed from the White House, from the Congress, or from the corporate media?
Virtually not at all.
That's the issue. Yeah. And I hope that some of the listeners will start thinking about that issue, demand discussion. So I say to the listeners, if technology has substantially improved, which it certainly has, if the average worker is far more productive than he or she was 30 years ago, why are we not making more money and working fewer hours rather than making less money and working more hours? That's a simple question. And I think we have got to demand discussion on that. And if we can do that, we can perhaps reverse the shrinkage of the middle class and see it expanding.
I agree, and there's a bunch of different techniques that we could talk about for doing that. I'd like to remind our listeners, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, if you'd like to talk with Bernie Sanders, 1-800-825-5937. Bernie, what do you think about living wage laws? What do you think about tariffs? What do you think about perhaps going back and revisiting the law that has allowed states to have what they call right-to-work states? What is it, Taft-Hartley?
I think that is extremely important because, Tom, when you raise those issues, you are identifying some of the factors which have resulted in the shrinking of the middle class. Let's just look at the minimum wage. The minimum wage was raised in the mid-90s in Washington. It was now raised to all of $5.15 an hour, $5.15 an hour. Now, you tell me in what state in the union somebody can earn enough money to stay alive if they're making $5.15 an hour. You certainly can't bring up a family. You can't pay the rent. You can't pay a mortgage on $5.15 an hour. What the living wage concept is about, and people all over the country are working on it, is they are saying, we don't want a quote-unquote minimum wage, which is a political definition. We want something that at the end of the week, a wage that at the end of the week, somebody who has worked 40 hours for will be able to pay for housing, pay for food, pay for health care, take care of his or her basic necessities. That is a living wage. We just did a study here, came out in the state of Vermont, and I think it was, I can't remember the number, to be honest. I don't want to throw a number out, but far more people than one would expect were not making that living wage. If you work in Walmart's today, the largest employer in the United States of America, the odds are you are not making that living wage. So I applaud all of those people all over the country and those municipalities that are beginning to say, wait, if we do business with a company, that company has got to pay people at least a wage that that person can live in dignity with. So that's a very, very important issue.
Yeah, I agree. And you remind me of Teddy Roosevelt. You know, back in 1912, 1913, Thomas Edison made a recording of Teddy Roosevelt talking about the living wage. Have you ever heard it?
No, I haven't.
I've got it. It's 36 seconds. I'd love to play it for you if you're up for it.
Boy, that's fantastic. Let's hear it.
I think our listeners would find it interesting too, because Teddy Roosevelt in 1913, when he was running as a populist, essentially invented the term living wage and brought it out, and he defined it really well. And I'll just quickly pause as I go through it just to make sure that people get the points, because it's not the very best quality. It was literally recorded by Thomas Edison. And here it is.
We stand for a living wage. Wages are subnormal if they fail to provide a living for those who devote their time and energy to industrial occupation. The monetary equivalent of a living wage varies according to local conditions, but must include enough to secure the elements of a normal standard of living.
Must include enough to secure a normal standard of living.
A standard high enough to make morality possible.
High enough to make morality possible, so you don't have to steal for food.
To provide for education and recreation.
To provide for education and recreation.
To care for immature members of the family.
To raise children.
To maintain the family during periods of sickness.
To pay for your health care.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age.
And to permit a reasonable saving for old age. Wasn't that brilliant?
Tom, that is incredible. Where did you find that?
Frankly, I don't remember, Bernie. I found it somewhere on the Internet probably a year ago, and I thought, this is just great.
What is unbelievable about that is that he could have, that's the exact same statement could be made today. That's the exact same principle. And sad to say that 90 years later, we're still fighting.
Yeah, well, that's why I brought it up, because when you were saying it, you were going through your list, and I was thinking, my God, I'm listening to Teddy Roosevelt. He must be reincarnated.
In other words, what he is saying, and he understood that it had to apply to local conditions, because the standard, the cost in one community may be much higher than another community. But what he is saying, which is absolutely common sense, is that if you work 40 hours a week, at the end of the week, you shouldn't be further in debt. You shouldn't be, as some Americans are, sleeping in your car because you can't afford affordable housing. You should have the ability to go to the doctor or the hospital. That's what he was saying. That is an amazing statement to think that that was said 90 years ago in exactly the same terminology, I think, that we would use it today.
Yeah, and I think that we need to bring back the recollection of people that this is not a new battle, and that there have been people, I mean, you know, the conservatives like to have us forget that anybody ever fought for these issues, and that this was ever considered a relatively normal thing in America. You know, that FDR brought back the idea of a living wage, that we built a middle class in the United States through the late 1940s, the 1950s, and the 1960s, based on the idea of protecting domestic industries with tariffs, having a minimum wage law that actually, before inflation was at least a starting point, and by encouraging unions and protecting them. And,
exactly,
Ronald
right.
Reagan just reversed all that.
Well, the amazing thing is, and your recording from Teddy Roosevelt just brings that home, is that we're fighting the fight that we've been fighting for 100 years, for basic human dignity. And what really disturbs me, just go back to 1913, compare the technology, the level of productivity at that point as compared to now. And it is obviously not comparable. What we are doing now is producing so much more. We have so much better technology that the question should arise is, why do we have poverty in America? Why do we need time and time again two breadwinners in a family working incredibly long hours at too low wages in order to pay the bills?
Yeah.
Why haven't we expanded the middle class? And why haven't we? Tom, but first of all, for a start, one of the damn reasons we haven't is that no one talks about this thing.
There you go.
I want people back. You know, people immediately gravitate to this issue or that issue. They forget about what's happening in their own lives. Listeners, if you're listening to the show, the likelihood is that today you are working longer hours for low wages than somebody who had your job 30 years ago, accounting for inflation. When I was growing up, the expectation was that to be in the middle class, Tom, you remember this, breadwinner, remember that?
Yeah.
One breadwinner in the family worked 40 hours a week, made enough money to take care of the family.
Well, that's the thing.
How many times in the middle class do we see that today? Very rarely.
Yeah, I've talked about that on the show here. I grew up in Lansing, Michigan, where the Oldsmobile factory was located, and most of my friends' parents worked at Oldsmobile. I grew up in a blue-collar part of town, and my dad ran a tool and die shop. He's the office manager for a tool and die shop, and most of my friends, usually their father worked at Oldsmobile, and on that paycheck was able to put a lot of them through college. Had full health benefits. I mean, it was just absolutely solid all the way through. 1-800-TALK, yes, by the way, is our phone number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a question for Bernie Sanders, today is brunch with Congressman Bernie Sanders, America's congressman, our independent from Vermont, and Glenn in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is on the line. Glenn, you have a question for Bernie?
Yeah, Tom. Bernie, I've always been puzzled by how the Republicans managed to get the old Southern Democrats to vote against their own self-interest. And I was reading a little bit about the net, and it seems to be the conclusion is they're using the fear of the Southern white man who perceives wrongly that everyone else is going past them, women and minorities, and they're going backwards. And that they tie into that fear as a way to get them to overlook the fact that, you know, they're getting $300 and the millionaires are getting thousands of dollars in tax breaks, and then the state has to raise their own taxes and how that affects them. All that gets lost because they're acting emotionally.
Glenn, I think you make a very, very important point. Historically, in terms of the South, what we have always known is that wages in the South were the lowest wages in the United States of America. And certainly one of the reasons that that was the case is what employers would do in the 40s, in the 50s, in the 60s, even before that, where they would say, well, yeah, your wages are not very high, but guess what? The black guy down the street can't drink at your water fountain, can't go to the movie theater, can't ride in the bus, so you're better than him. So what they did is played off white against black, and they laughed all the way to the bank. And I think what the Republicans increasingly do is they really can't talk about the basic economic issues because so transparently they are on the side of the big money interest in large corporations. They have nothing to say about that, nothing to say about what Tom was talking about. Do they believe in a living wage? Believe me, not only do they not believe in a living wage, a majority of the Republicans in the House, I believe, would abolish the minimum wage today. But they don't want to talk about that. They prefer to talk about race and homophobia and sexism and stuff like that. And
yeah, these are just distractions, just absolute distractions. Glenn, thank you for the call. Bernie, hang on. We've got a break here we got to take.
Okay, we'll be here.
This is the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network Brunch with Bernie segment. Stay tuned. We'll be back with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear, we did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen, for the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol is lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Show.
Yeah, we're going to catch him doing something right. Senator Bob Graham of Florida said today that he will file a bill to prohibit charging service members for meals while they are hospitalized as a result of injuries or illnesses suffered while in combat or training for combat. Graham says, how can we justify spending billions of dollars on no-bid contracts to rebuild Iraq, then turn around and charge an injured soldier $8.10 a day for meals while he's being treated for war injuries? Marine Staff Sergeant Bill Merwin of Nevada, he was billed $243 for his meals while he was in the hospital because his foot got blown off in Iraq. Ain't privatization wonderful? So Bob Graham says he's going to put into Congress a law saying no more. It's against the law to charge service members for their meals. Thank you, Bob Graham. Well done.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
At night we ride the mansions of glory and soul.
back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where despair is not an option. Get active. Get politically active. Get involved. We're talking with the master of that, Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, in our Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman program. And, Bernie, we've got several callers on the line. Trish from Idaho, Armin in Florida, Melvin in Pennsylvania. We'll start out with Trish in Idaho. Hey, Trish, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hey.
You there?
Well, we're right here.
We are. Yeah,
okay.
You're live and on the air.
Okay. What I'm calling for is mostly because I kind of see this whole very extremist conservative party taking advantage and exploiting several different issues which are kind of a conglomerate. The states have no social funding right now. I think with the exception of Vermont, most of them are in a deficit. And with that kind of a social program and our schools being in decline, we seem to have a systemic failure that they take advantage of by recruiting these people into the military and then saying that they're there as patriots, not because 90% of them are there because of, scandalous, as Rumsfeld puts, boosting the kitty on incentive to meet the recruiting quotas.
It's like Jessica Lynch just wanted to be a teacher.
Yeah, yeah. And, sitting here as a middle-class American, well, trying to be a middle-class, working poor, we're trying to hold on to both some of the old traditional ideals as well as using some of the new innovations. But I see a huge paradigm shift where we went from being a manufacturing, innovative country that could export products and services that the world could use and need to now we have become the worldwide purchasing department.
Yeah. So, Trisha, so your question.
Well said.
Yeah. Trisha.
Well, my question is, Bernie, how does a person we're basically all rats caught on these little wheels, how do you really go about either in your local communities or even on a national level to get a lot of Americans to understand that that the time that we're in right now isn't about this foreign patriotism? We're talking about a major decline that the U.S. will never be great again.
Great. Trish, thank you, Tricia.
Thank you. That is, Tom, boy, that's an excellent question. And Trish, I think there is no magic answer to that question. Anyone who tells you they have a one-line answer to it is wrong. But I think the key point is what Tom Hartman just said a moment ago. We can't afford despair. We need in our democracy a concept for which people fought and died, for people to be politically active. We have got to change the political culture. The fact of the matter is, everybody who is listening to this program is a powerful person. Believe me, you are. If you get together with your coworkers, with your family, and your friends, you can exert enormous power over your government. You can throw people out of office who you don't like. You can push legislation that you do like. The reason that Bush and his corporate buddies get away with what they get away with is they assume that half the people don't vote. They assume that most of the media will not be discussing the important issues. Certainly, people will not be educated, especially young people, about how they can impact the world in which they are living. So the antidote to that, in my view, is just what Tom said. It's political activism. What does it mean? It means get together with your coworkers and your friends and invite your governor, invite your member of Congress, invite your mayor, your town officials, to talk about issues that you feel are important. Senator, what are you going to do to make sure that everybody in America has national health care, that we all have health care as a right of citizenship? Senator, what are you going to do to raise the minimum wage? We've got to take it to them and become politically active and go on the offensive.
Amen. Thank you, Bernie. Well said. Thank you, Tricia, for that call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Brunch with Bernie Sanders right after this break.
Dead. Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, and just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Season's greetings. This is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show, wishing all of you a very happy holiday season and a peaceful new year.
The upstream migration of some salmon is a spectacular event that's become tainted by chemicals. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every fall, millions of salmon leave the ocean to swim up rivers in the Pacific Northwest. The fish fight strong currents and hurl themselves over rapids to reach the lakes where they spawn. They die after laying their eggs. It's an exciting time for anglers to be fishing, and it's a feast for a lot of bears and eagles. But new research casts a shadow over this event. The salmon often carry toxic chemicals with them on their journey upstream. Jules Blaise is an environmental chemist at the University of Ottawa, and he studies the movement of chemicals from the ocean into freshwater rivers and lakes. Blaise says ocean water has low concentrations of industrial pollutants, and those chemicals accumulate in the tissues of marine creatures. Salmon consume tiny amounts of PCBs and dioxins every day, and they store those chemicals in their fat. By the time they're adults, salmon can have PCBs in their fat at levels 2,000 times higher than the seawater around them. Blaise says some scenic lakes in the Pacific Northwest receive millions of salmon each year. That many fish can bring in a hefty load of toxic chemicals.
When we looked at how much PCBs these salmon were actually carrying, we were quite surprised to see that in the case of some lakes that receive millions of salmon, the amount of PCBs released by salmon is comparable to the amount of PCBs released by a hazardous waste incinerator. So it's as though you had taken a waste incinerator and placed it on that remote site.
Blaise says most of the chemicals are released directly into lake sediments when the salmon die and decay, but bears and eagles also absorb some of these chemicals when they eat the fish, and Blaise plans to do more research to see how they're affected. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I dreamed I saw Joe Hill last night, alive as you or me. Says I, but Joe, you're 10 years dead. I never died, said he. I never died, said he.
And welcome back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. That was Joan Collins, Joe Hill. Joe Hill, the famous labor organizer who was put to death in, as I recall, Salt Lake City. back in the last century, or the century before last, actually, as I recall. It's been some years since I've read the story of Joe Hill, but quite a dramatic one. Anyhow, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the program. And, Bernie, did you want to wrap up anything you were saying on that last point, or should we go on to the next caller?
We can go on to the next caller, but I think Trish hit it right on the head. There are enormously serious economic problems facing our country. If we continue to lose manufacturing and grow the Walmarts, we are going to be an impoverished country. And she's absolutely right about that.
But Bernie, just before we move on, how do we implement? How do we go back to implementing tariffs to protect particularly critical industries? I mean, I'm concerned about the fact that the guidance systems in our missiles are made in foreign countries, and some of them were made in Japan, and now Japan is subcontracting them to China, which is a dictatorship. I mean, this is bizarre.
No, you're absolutely right, and the first reality is that in the last 3 years, we have lost over 2.5 million decent-paying manufacturing jobs. Second concern, as you've just raised, there are many people who worry about national security. If we are not manufacturing products, including defense industry, in the United States, we're going to be dependent upon other countries for the military help that we need, military technology that we need, and in some cases, especially with China, we may be giving them some very valuable technology.
Yeah. Yeah, so would we have to pull out of WTO and just walk away from the GATT treaties?
Given the disastrous record of NAFTA, of permanent normal trade relations with China, of the WTO, it's time to say it has not worked for the middle class and working families of America. We believe in trade, but it has to be based on principles which benefit the middle class and working families, not just the multinational corporations. I have introduced legislation that would end the permanent normal trade relations that we have with China.
You have. Congratulations. Yep. That's wonderful.
We've got some good co-sponsors, but Republicans as well as Democrats.
That is great. It just seems to me that the one good lesson that we've learned from George W. Bush is that we don't need no stinking treaties. You know, if there's a treaty that doesn't work, we can walk away from it, as he did with Kyoto and as he did with defense.
It hasn't worked. Let's end it.
Yeah, okay. 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. In the meantime, we've got a few more calls have stacked up here. We've got Armin in Florida, Melvin in Pennsylvania, Jim driving through Chicago, and Doug in Santa Fe. Guys, hang on here, and we'll try and make each one relatively short because we've got another 15 minutes in this segment. Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Bernie, it's an honor to talk to you. I think you're a fabulous human being.
Thank you.
I'd like to also say we need to get the people that are being deceived and diverted from what's really happening to them, the so-called masses out there that still believe in the conservative lie. And we need to ask those people, you know, you should ask yourself, your Republicans in Congress, and some Democrats, I might add, why don't they want for you what they want for themselves? What they want for themselves is a fabulous minimum wage. They have fabulous health care that's 72% subsidized by the government, which is you, the poor people, and the middle class, what's left.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't they want the fabulous retirement system that they have, too? So you need to ask these people, if they really have your interest, which they really don't, we believe they don't, we know they don't, they need to ask themselves, why wouldn't they want for you what they want for themselves before they take it for themselves if they were really your representatives?
Okay, thank you, Armin in Florida. Good question, Bernie. Of course, Bernie is a they, not the... So, Bernie, what are your thoughts
on that? Well, Armin raises exactly the right issue. And the issue here, and Armin used the word divert attention. That's the he used. Yeah. I use the word deflect attention. The fact of the matter is, when you talk to the American people and you tell them what Armin just said, do you think it's right that you have a Congress which does well for itself, but even more importantly, because that's a relatively small amount of money, it's 535 people, but a Congress who votes to send your jobs, literally, Tom, this is the truth. You have corporations like General Electric and IBM who receive taxpayer subsidies, tax breaks from the United States government, and the thank you that they give the working families of America is to say, goodbye, we're going to China, we're going to Mexico. We subsidize the exodus of jobs to America. So I think what we have got to do is change the political culture. I know I'm going to say this over and over again, so that people understand that in a democracy, not only do you have the right to vote, you have the right to hold your elected officials accountable. You invite them to meetings. And if they don't have the time to address your issues of low wages, of lack of health care, of an absurd trade policy, if they can't talk to you about them, then you're not there for them in November. But we have got to take the issue to them. To the degree that we get stuck on issues of, you know, the homophobic agenda of the Republican parties, the effort there is very, very clear. Its function is to divert people's attention from the meat and potatoes issues which face them every single day. And that's what these Republicans are going to do. They're going to deflect attention away from the economy, the shrinking middle class, and the fact that Americans are working longer hours for lower wages.
Right, and try to talk about God, gays,
that's
and
right.
guns.
Some, that's yeah. exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number, Melvin in Pennsylvania is on the line. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Brunch with Bernie. Melvin?
Hello.
Hey, Melvin, you're live and on the air.
All right. Let me first start by saying we took a great big step backwards when we began building from the outside in as opposed to from the inside out as a country. And it seems as though the less money we make, the more time we have to spend making money. And the more time we spend trying to make this money, the less time we have to, as a people, govern what we deem as a democracy. But my question is, wouldn't it make more sense, since the dollar is devalued, that we would increase wages?
Hmm. In other words, our stuff is getting cheaper overseas. Is that what you're talking about? The devaluation of the dollar? You're talking about inflation, or
yes. Okay. Like,
well,
does
inflation,
that have anything to do with the wages as well?
No, I think, Melvin, what's going on is the following. In 1973, 30 years ago, believe it or not, real inflation accounted for wages were higher than at any point in American history. Since that point, we have gone downhill. And I think what happened about 30 years ago is corporate America got together and they said, hey, enough is enough. We're seeing an expansion of the middle class. We're seeing wages going up. We're seeing poverty becoming lower. This is not good for us, the corporate leaders of America. So what they began to do in a number of different ways is get heavily involved in politics, also become much more anti-union than used to be the case. Previously, they would sit down and negotiate with unions. But they changed their philosophy to say, we don't want to negotiate with unions. We want to break unions. We are going to begin taking decent-paying jobs in the United States abroad. Tom, you may have heard that the fellow who's head of General Electric very recently, he made the statement. He said that when he talks to his general managers, the people who own the various companies within GE, what he said to them is, China, 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 China. In other words, sell out America, move to China. So there's been a very strong offensive in a number of ways, politically, economically, labor relations, by which corporate America says, we want it all. The hell with the middle class, the hell with working people. The results have been huge tax breaks for the rich and large corporations, a growing gap between the rich and the poor, so that we now have the greatest economic divide between rich and poor of any industrialized country. That's what's going on. The wealthy are making out like bandits, the middle class is shrinking, and poverty is growing.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem to be slowing down. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Jim driving through Chicago is on the line. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program with Bernie Sanders.
Yes, how are you today?
Good.
The lady that sung the opening song there, Joan Baez.
Joan Baez, that's right.
We need to hear more of her beautiful, haunting voice.
Yes.
It takes me back to getting my head busted in during the riots in Atlanta in the early 70s and late 60s. And her voice, along with Pete Seeger and a lot of other voices, made this country change during Vietnam. And, you know, this administration has its hands around our government's throat and around the throat of the middle class. And if these people don't wake up out there, we're gonna end up, feeding at the feet of the Bush and Cheney family. I'm not going to kiss his feet, and I'm not going to wash his feet. So the American people better wake up, and I want to know what Mr. Sanders and people that think like him are going to do about all this. You know, this has got me highly disturbed. I appreciate your show so much.
Well, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
Jim, thanks for your call, and I agree with your sentiment. What I can tell you, what I did, is when I was elected and took office in 1991, I put together a group called the Progressive Caucus, which now has 54 members, which is clearly the most racially and regionally integrated caucus in the Congress. And our main function is on economic issues.
Bernie, if I can interrupt you, why don't you explain real quickly what a caucus is?
Well, in Congress, a caucus is the coming together of people who have similar interests. So you'll see a Hispanic caucus, a women's caucus, you'll see a rural caucus, an urban caucus,
right.
A caucus of people who are focusing on a particular issue and want to use their collective strength. But when I became elected, there really was no caucus per se that had brought together the Black caucus, the Hispanic caucus, and so forth to focus on economic issues. So the issues that we are talking about, Jim, is changing our trade policy, telling large corporations that instead of investing in China, they're going to have to invest in the United States of America, which means repealing permanent normal trade relations with China, WTO, NAFTA, all of which have been a disaster. It means raising the minimum wage to a living wage. It means doing what every other industrialized country on earth has done, and that is pass a national health care program. It means creating decent-paying jobs by breaking our dependency on fossil fuel and moving to sustainable energy, solar, hydrogen fuel cells, wind power, and so forth. So it means encouraging a vibrant democracy through campaign finance reform so the big money interests do not determine politically what happens in our countries. Those are some of the things that some of us are working on.
Great. Well said, Bernie. Kurt in Spokane, Washington is on the line. Oh, sorry about that, Steph. Okay, we'll take Doug in Santa Fe first. Doug in Santa Fe. Got you out of order there, Doug. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm going back a few segments ago to when you were talking about the missile parts being manufactured in different countries around the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you fast forward the way everything's going about 25 years, the world governments of each individual country will no longer exist. They will be basic puppets for the multinational corporations, and they really don't care whether or not the missile parts are being manufactured in what country, because they're going to start fighting amongst themselves and using us, the people of the world, as pawns. They're in Iraq, they were stating there's 10,000 private military individuals in Iraq doing the work of the U.S. military.
Right, it's about a quarter of the entire... Yeah.
They're mercenaries, and these mercenaries are corporations. They are the movies that we've seen over the 80s and 90s. This sounds corny as hell, but there is some truth to them.
Yeah, it's the Blade Runner world that you're talking about there, Doug. Doug, is there a question in there for Bernie?
Is there any way, Mr. Sanders, that you could seriously light a fire under the butts of some of our Congress people to get and assist them from breaking away from corporate money?
Well, thank you, Doug, for the call. Bernie, this is just a persistent thing. It seems like people are asking you to do something. We need to ask them to do something as well.
That's right. Obviously, you know, I represent one state. We have 434 other members of the Congress. But I think these are the kinds of issues that people are going to have to bring to their members of Congress and members of the United States Senate. I think Doug's point about this one world type of thing, without getting into conspiracy theory, I mean, I think essentially that's what globalization is increasingly about. You have institutions like the IMF and the World Bank, and what they do is they say to local poor governments around the world that if you want any financial assistance, if you want a loan, you're going to have to cut back on food supplies for your people. You're going to have to cut back on education and health care funding. And essentially what you are having is increasingly centralized power all over the world, because countries like the United States, some of the European countries, run the IMF, run the World Bank, and those institutions are then run by some of the large corporations who exert enormous influence. I believe, obviously, in the United Nations, I believe that we want peace throughout the world. We want positive relations between countries. But I'm old-fashioned, and I do believe in the concept of nation-state. That means we have the United States of America. We have a country. It is manageable. We have 250 million people. We elect people. Let us create a vibrant democracy in our own country. Now, the good news that I would tell to Doug is that when conservative members of Congress go home to the Midwest, go home elsewhere, and they look at their districts and they see decent-paying jobs decimated, that they've gone to China, a lot of these guys are rethinking their position on the trade issue. And many of them are agreeing with what Tom was saying a moment ago, the need to rebuild manufacturing in America. So we're seeing a significant upsurge in that understanding.
Great, great. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. Kurt in Spokane is up next. Kurt, we'll pick you up on the other side of this break. If you can just hold on the line for another couple of minutes. Bernie, stick with us. This is Tom Hartman, Brunch with Bernie on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
do Rumsfeld now?
You know, I talk about doing acid 30 years ago. Rumsfeld must do it daily. Right before he goes out for a press conference, Rummy comes out all acid-headed up and, you know, just stoned on his ass, just completely freaked out.
Oh, hi. I noticed the doorknobs are all crawling around the ceiling. Hello. Ask me nothing. Get these spiders off of me. People are waving things at me. There's stuff jumping out of doors. Ew, Jesus. You know, the fire hose on the wall there, it just rose up like a snake. And you're asking me questions like, I don't know this stuff.
This is the Secretary of Defense, Truth Seeker. It's insane. Do you understand? These people are crazy.
So crazy someplace else. We're all stocked up here.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, and happy holidays to everybody, and happy Friday. It's Tom Hartman. We're talking with Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the first independent congressman elected in 40 years in 1991 when he first went to Congress, been reelected five times, the longest-serving independent in the history of the United States House of Representatives. Kurt in Spokane, Washington, has a question for Bernie. Kurt, we've only got about 3 minutes left in the segment, so real quick.
Well, I'll take a lot less than that. Morning, Bernie and Tom.
Morning.
I'm curious as to what are the numbers, percentage-wise, of people that think like or similar to yourself on the Hill? What is the number in the general populace of the United States? And I understand we should be writing to newspapers, calling our congressmen and so on, but where is the voice of Democrats, media, now Green Party, Sierra Club, et cetera, that already has a microphone in front of them? And it's obvious that you cannot win an election if people are uneducated as to what the facts are. So what is being done, or why isn't something being done in the South or in the rest of the United States to educate people what the truth of the facts are?
Okay. Pretty broad question there, Kurt.
Well,
Bernie, take a shot at it.
It's an important question. Kurt, let me start off by saying, and this is my belief, I know that the point of view that I've been expressing today is certainly not held by 100% of the American people. But, you know, when you ask people whether you give tax breaks to billionaires or you fund education, the overwhelming majority of the people are with us. Ask Americans whether we should have a health care program that guarantees health care to all people. They're with us. Raise the minimum wage. They're with us. Change the trade policy. They're with us. On most of the issues that I've been talking about today and that our listeners have been talking about, that Tom Hartman has been talking about, we have majority support. In many ways, George Bush is a fringe candidate with his ideology. Most people don't agree with it. Now, Kurt asked, well, why don't we educate the people? Why don't we get the word out? Well, Kurt, that takes us to the issue of corporate control over the media. People like Tom Hartman are doing a great job, but Rush Limbaugh is on stations all across America because corporate America likes Rush Limbaugh, likes Sean Hannity, not so crazy about people like Tom Hartman. That takes us to the whole issue of media, and that's another fight that we've got to have and win.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a fight that, you know, a lot of people are taking on. Bernie Sanders, Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us this hour.
Pleasure,
thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
tortilla is thank you in Mandarin Chinese.
Is it really, Nancy?
Bantila is right, like cool.
Chinese lesson now.
Wow, Nancy, you're so smart.
Bantila.
You know everything. I should have watched MSNBC.
I want to be just like you. I figure all I need's a lobotomy and some tights.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld has approved the deployment of an extra brigade of the elite 82nd Airborne Division to Iraq in January and extended that of another brigade to maintain combat power as other forces are being swapped out. The deployment will increase the total size of the U.S. force by a couple of thousand troops over a three-month period in which the entire force is being replaced with fresh units. General John Abizaid, commander of the U.S. Central Command, asked for the deployment of the 82nd Airborne's 1st Brigade after deciding that an infantry brigade of the Washington National Guard that was supposed to deploy in January needed more training. The chairman of a federal commission looking into the September 11th attacks said Thursday that mistakes over many years left the United States vulnerable to such an attack, but he resisted pinning blame on either of the last two presidential teams. Chairman Thomas Kane said the 10-member commission on terrorist attacks upon the United States has not decided whether to ask former President Clinton or President Bush to testify. He also said that any conclusions about the performance of high-level officials will be reached when the commission has finished its work. Kane sought to clarify remarks attributed to him in a CBS News report that aired Wednesday. David Kaye, head of the U.S. effort to find weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, has told administration officials that he plans to leave before the Iraq Survey Group's work is completed and could depart before February. The move comes as more of Kaye's staff has been diverted from the weapons hunt to help search for Iraqi insurgents, and at a time when expectations remain low that any weaponry will be discovered. When Kaye accepted the job in June, he expected to quickly find the expansive evidence that the administration had claimed as its primary reason for going to war. Rather, Kaye's preliminary report in October said the group so far had only discovered that Iraq was working to acquire chemical and biological weapons, had missile programs under various stages of development, and possessed only a rudimentary nuclear program. Two officials confirmed that Kaye is planning on leaving early and said the question remaining is how soon. More news after this.
I'm Don Henley. 2003 marks the centennial anniversary of the National Wildlife Refuge System. Today, more than 530 refuges conserve some 90 million acres throughout the country. With a refuge in each and every state, and many within short drives of major cities, it's easy to see what the National Wildlife Refuge System is all about. Help us celebrate this truly outstanding legacy. Visit your local refuge.
The Nielsen television ratings found that more people watched The Simple Life on Fox than watched George W. Bush's ABC News interview just a couple of days after Saddam Hussein was caught. The Bush interview was seen by 11 million people, while the Fox show was seen by nearly 12 million. That's about the same size as the audience who watched the CBS drama starring Mark Harmon. Bush did manage to beat out a rerun of Whoopi Goldberg's show on NBC. This is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it gonna be? 12 hours of relief, or symptoms that interrupt your day. Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
Looking for a real estate bargain? John Schiffler, who lives in the pricey San Francisco area, has a terrific deal for you. He's got a place for sale that's located along historic Millionaire's Row, is built of gorgeous granite, is in pristine condition, is on a tree-lined boulevard in a quiet neighborhood with spectacular views of Golden Gate Bridge, and get this, the price is only $250,000. The only catch is that you have to move in with Schiffler's family, his dead family. He has hung a for sale sign on his family's tomb, a sturdy mausoleum in one of the most prestigious cemeteries in the Bay Area. Mountain View Cemetery, first laid out in 1863 by one of America's most eminent landscapers, Frederick Law Olmsted, is the final resting place of railroad barons, steel magnates, chocolate tycoons, and other people of wealth, including Mr. Schiffler's family. The mausoleum presently contains the remains of his grandfather, mother, father, and two aunts. But alas, old wealth doesn't always last. John, 63, has recently divorced and remarried, so he now finds himself in need of income. One could get a job, of course, but that's not real money. Besides, working for a living is really a bit tacky. So he's put the old home place up for sale. What's to come of the deceased who's presently in residence? Not to worry, for Schiffler promises to clean them out, saying he'd gladly reinter them down the road. Quote, "It's not as if I'd be casting their bones and ashes to the fall winds." He says he can do what he wants with the mausoleum, including, he threatens, dividing it up into condo crypts and selling them on a layaway plan. This is Jim Hightower saying, John claims to love his dearly departed family, but he asks, do we create stability for the dead at the expense of the living? You can't let ancestry get in the way of cash, can you?
Doug, listening to you sing Back in the Saddle Again just goes to show what happens when Nancy isn't around to rein you in. God help us and anyone else listening in at that time. I think that was very nice. I'm back in the saddle again.
There's a certain pumpkin patch charm to you when you do this.
Really?
Well, doggy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. It's the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Interrogators are showing Saddam Trista and Ryan's wedding. Have you seen this on Andy Borowitz's website, borowitzreport.com? U.S. interrogators are pressuring Saddam Hussein to cooperate with them by repeatedly showing him ABC's two-hour wedding special featuring bachelorette Trista Rand and Ryan Sutter, the Pentagon acknowledged today. News of the Pentagon's use of Trista and Ryan's wedding rippled through the international human rights circles today, with some watchdog groups claiming that showing certain reality programs to prisoners of war could be in violation of the Geneva Convention. Watching Trista, this is a quote from Dr. Joseph Clare, a leading human rights activist based in Brussels. He said, watching Trista marry Ryan once is punishment, but watching it 6-7 times in a row, that may in fact constitute torture. At a press briefing in Washington, Secretary of Defense Donald H. Rumsfeld said that showing Saddam the video of the Ren-Sutter nuptials was, quote, something we did not enter into lightly, end quote. Mr. Rumsfeld said, someone to watch Trista and Ryan's wedding cruel? Yes, but I submit to you, so is Saddam Hussein. In addition to defending the use of the excruciating wedding special, the defense secretary refused to rule out playing Clay Aiken's new CD to the Iraqi madman over and over again until he screams. May I remind you, gentlemen, he said, we are at war. In other Saddam news, the owner of the firm in Tikrit, where the Iraqi strongman was captured, objected to the media's characterization of the dictator's hiding place as a hole. The farmer said, hey, you try to rent out a place that everybody and his uncle is calling a hole? Okay, it's not roomy, but it would be a perfect for a young couple starting out. Andy Borowitz, Borowitz.com. You know, it's funny, actually. You think about it. When we brought down Noriega in Panama, and we set up those loudspeakers all around his mansion, and we played the most obnoxious rock and roll music we could find, and 24 hours a day for a couple of days, and when they were trying to get the Branch Davidians to freak out and do whatever they were trying to get them to do, I'm not sure it was ever made clear. And they set up speakers and they played to them sounds of people screaming and animals dying and strange things like that. So maybe it's possible, I suppose. Anyhow, the a Walmart alert. We have a Walmart alert for you this hour. It's
I hate Walmart.
Our official.
Well, here's how it is.
Our official Walmart music.
Open itself a low cost drive, mom and pop out of business. All over the land, one big square store, identical brand, and that's why I hate Walmart. Used to be you drive around, stop in on three or four towns, encounter different sights and sounds, different if not unique, different accents, different spells, different things to buy and sell. Now it's all Taco Bell. I hate Walmart. Roll juice, dip and wine, you drive slow, relax your mind. Never knew what you'd find around the next bend. But now the freeway goes so straight, it go right past the front of the gate. I don't feel human, I feel like great. I hate Walmart.
And our Walmart alert for the day, the Turlock City Council has made up its mind. Walmart is not welcome there. Jim Watt, Vice President of Real Estate for Save Mart, which is a group that was trying to, a competitor, a small local, department store, I guess is what they used to call them in the old days, told the council that one only needs to travel to Walmart's heartland to see its impact on other businesses. Watt said that during a trip to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, quote, we saw one vacant shopping center after another. Dan Miller, vice president of a trucking company, Smart Transport, said his company depends on local businesses like Foster Farms and Sunnyside Farms. This, of course, the Turlock local news. They want to keep local businesses alive. Well, Walmart's side of the story, Walmart Community Affairs Manager Peter Canellos presented the council with petitions signed by citizens who opposed the proposed ordinance, this ordinance that would block the Walmart, and said claims that the company pays low wages are simply not true. Councilmember Marty Yerby said he was offended when corporate Walmart representatives scoured through the personal files of council members, quote, without our permission, end quote, in an attempt to dig up dirt. To me, Yerby said, that is underhanded. And so a final reading of the proposed ordinance is still coming down the road. But anyhow, this is it's going to be next January 17th. But so far, the city of Turlock, you know what's funny is I don't know what state Turlock is in. Anyhow, the city of Turlock, going to have to get a little better here on our news stories, has defended itself against Walmart's invasion.
Walmart.
And now union bosses, this is more fallout of Walmart Nation. Union bosses call on the nation to boycott Safeway stores. This story from the Los Angeles Times this week by Nancy Cleland. Leaders from around the country meet in Los Angeles to show support for grocery workers in the labor dispute. The article from the Los Angeles Times points out several thousand striking and locked out supermarket workers and their supporters marched to a pavilion store in Beverly Hills on Tuesday in the largest demonstration since the regional walkout began October 11th. The union is also sought to portray its fight with Safeway Inc., Albertsons Inc., and Kroger Company, these are all parents of Ralph's, as a pivotal moment for American labor. This has been the stores that they're striking against. I believe that the issue here is health benefits and pay. If we lose here, said National UFCW President Doug Doherty, we're going to have to get one of these folks on to talk about this, it will set off a corporate tidal wave that will sweep away benefits in contracts in all industries. Safeway spokesman Brian Dowling told the Associated Press, this is an old tactic that won't impact what's going on in Southern California. Yeah, striking is an old tactic, and boycotts. They're calling for a boycott, actually. Doherty also announced there'd be a national campaign to boycott Safeway, the parent company of Vons and Pavilions and the union's top public target. We want to empty these stores, he said. So, here we are. Time to boycott Safeway, Albertson, Kroger, Ralph's, and so on, if you are in support of this action by the UFCW. Jose Sanchez, a clerk at the Ralph's in Burbank, said his father and grandfather were migrant farm workers who marched with Cesar Chavez. My dad picked strawberries, Sanchez said. Now look at me. I've got a family, a house, picket fence, and all, the American dream. That's what my dad and grandfather fought for. I'm not going to give it up now. But, of course, the corporate masters of America and their howdy-doody in the White House would love for you to give it up. Insecurity on the part of workers is good. Just ask Alan Greenspan. Talk about the environment for a few minutes. Before I get to that, this is interesting. This from the Progress Report today, the American Center for American Progress. Conservatives are turning on themselves. It's a feeding frenzy, eating their own children. The Drudge Report, the right-wing website yesterday, reported that in an eat-their-young move, Bill O'Reilly attacked the right-wing's own Matt Drudge simply because he reported that O'Reilly's book sales, quote, lag far behind rivals Al Franken and Senator Hillary Clinton, end quote. O'Reilly responded to the report by saying, and I quote, the Matt Drudges of the world and these other people, Michael Moore and all these crazies, all right, no responsibility, that is a threat to democracy, I think, end quote. Riley, who regularly rails against crime and violence in society, also said, quote, there is no cure other than to kill Matt Drudge, end quote. Yes, the good old American conservative way. Line them up and shoot them. Newsweek, apparently, their December 15th cover story about lawsuit hell is really pulling some criticism here. Joan Claybrook, president of Public Citizen, the group has done a lot of good over the years. One of the groups that Ralph Nader started back, as I recall, in the 60s. I think it was one of his very first ones. Joan Claybrook is criticizing Newsweek for, quote, adding a partnership with NBC for a week-long broadcast tie-in and online chats, including one of the lead author and lawsuit victims described in the article. She says that this article in Newsweek magazine is actually a one-sided diatribe masquerading as investigative journalism. Basically, the gist of it, apparently, is, isn't it terrible? All these people are suing corporations when they've been harmed. We shouldn't have this. I mean, certainly there are frivolous lawsuits. Nobody denies that. There are also laws against frivolous lawsuits and penalties for frivolous lawsuits. It appears that those are not being well reported on by Newsweek. According to Claybrook, the article includes, and I quote, many false and exaggerated anecdotes that present an unbalanced and negative caricature of the legal system, and two, many major factual inaccuracies about the legal system and lawsuits, and three, proposed solutions that have no basis in experience. Like, don't let people sue corporations anymore, I would assume. As a result, Newsweek has gone beyond advocacy journalism, Claybrook says, to crusade against consumers' access to the courts. A crusade without precedent, even among news outlets with overt conservative leanings. End of quote. Newsweek getting a little heat there from Public Citizen. Speaking of heat, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, leaders of one of the nation's top scientific organizations issued a new warning this week that human activities, most notably greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and other industries, are warming Earth's climate at a faster rate than ever. Yes, the cons don't like to talk about global warming in the United States. Every other country in the world not only discusses it, acknowledges it, you know, tips their hat to it, and is trying to do something about it, most of them. But here is, this flies in the face, the Progress Report, this flies in the face of the administration's denial that human activity contributes to global warming. I mean, you know, we refuse to sign the Kyoto Treaty. You've got 2,000, over 2,000 of the world's top climate scientists. I mean, the cream of the crop. Signing a document, it was about 4 years ago, saying global warming is real, the science is irrefutable. The IPCC, and you've got four crank scientists who are funded by and large, the oil industry, saying, no, there's no such thing as global warming, it's just a fantasy. And now the science, of course, is becoming overwhelming. But this administration listens to these four crank PhDs who get their funding from industry and ignores all the science of the planet. All the science of the planet. The White House has directed the EPA to scrub sections of a report on global warming contrary to scientific analysis by removing the phrase that said climate change has global consequences for human health and the environment. That's amazing. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, the Democracy Zone. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Can I help you, sir?
I'm panicked. I'm dating. What should I get for the stocking stuffer? Is an oven mitt too personal?
Okay, listen. Get a gift that every woman loves. A Venus razor.
Every woman?
With just one stroke, I get silky smooth skin, which makes me feel like a goddess.
Oh, I love a silky smooth goddess.
Then a Venus razor will solve your gift-giving problem.
Ah, make it 9 Venus razors.
9?
I'm dating a lot.
Looking for the perfect stocking stuffer for all the women on your list? The Venus razor from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune in to tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
Look, you had the a chance to date Anna Nicole Smith, would you?
I found her appealing a few years ago, but there were things about her that intrigued me. That's all. I mean, I don't always get intrigued
by them. I just can't believe you, of all people, would choose a date based simply on the physical.
I hate to disappoint you.
You're a dirty dog.
The IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number if you'd like to be on the program today. 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 825-5937. And Amanda in Florida is on the line. Hey, Amanda, what city are you in Florida?
Jensen Beach.
Oh, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm enjoying your show. Reason I'm calling, someone sent me an email with a link to a website that has some pictures of Saddam Hussein and the guy that was captured, and, you know, obviously we've all seen the pictures a million times of the guy that was captured, and not so recently we've seen pictures of actual Saddam Hussein. But they look a lot different. They took two pictures of, you know, with the same types of poses, three, four pictures like that, and then they show them, and it doesn't look like Saddam Hussein to me. And I was wondering, have you seen this website, or...
I haven't, but Amanda, how do you know that the pictures that the website is purporting to show? I mean, Saddam Hussein has been, you know, he's had photographs in Time Magazine and Newsweek. There's that famous picture of Don Rumsfeld shaking his hand, and I think it was 84 or 87. And, in fact, the anniversary of that is December 20th, as I recall. What was that, tomorrow? Is the 20th, as I think. 20th anniversary. I saw that someplace this morning, of Don Rumsfeld shaking his hand. I mean, how do you know that this website isn't showing you some phony Saddam? And
that's what I was wondering, but it really looks, when you look at the pictures of the guy that they purport to be the real Saddam Hussein, he looks very familiar, too. In fact, he looks a lot more familiar than the guy with the beard that they shaved the beard and looked in his mouth and all that.
Yeah,
it looks like a different person.
Yeah, I'm inclined, Amanda, to dismiss the conspiracy theory notion simply because he's still alive. You know, if he was dead, then, I mean, the conspiracy theories ran crazy in Iraq when Uday and Qusay were shot. Everybody, you know, all the Iraqis, I mean, in the Middle East, conspiracy theories are you know, they're the mother's milk of normal discourse, you know, of normal conversation. Everybody has a conspiracy theory about something. I remember a couple of years ago I was in Vienna, Austria, and we had dinner in the home of well, now that I'm speaking somewhat negatively of them, I'm not going to identify the country, but it was the ambassador from one of the Middle Eastern countries, and the ambassadors from three other Middle Eastern countries joined us. And it was just before the first Gulf War, actually, like the week of it, the week before. And the whole discussion was about how, you know, the Israelis are all behind all this, and the Bush administration, and the 1,000 points of light, and it's all a conspiracy, and it's an internationalist, and this and that and the other thing. And this was from the ambassadors, right? I mean, conspiracy theories are everywhere. And, of course, all the conspiracy theories about Uday and Qusay were running crazy because they were dead. But this guy's alive. I don't think that they're going to, you know, I think if he was alive, the fact that he's alive, you know, says to me, well, first of all, I think they actually really got Uday and Qusay. But I think that's one of the reasons that they actually wanted to take him alive is because there's still people in Iraq who believe that Uday and Qusay are still alive. And you know, by getting him alive, they can say, hey, you know, answer some questions here. Are you still there, Amanda?
Yeah, I'm just wondering if this guy's actually going to stand trial or if somebody's going to, you know, renegade person's just going to shoot him and then it's going to be over and nobody will be the wiser if it's not actually him. I mean, I got another email way back when that said that Saddam Hussein was airlifted out and this somebody in the military or somebody, you know, was saying that. And I was like you. I just said, yeah, right. Well, we'll see. And then I looked at these pictures, and I'm telling you, it really looks like, you know, there's reason for it. But, yeah,
you know,
everybody's still saying that they got him. And
Amanda, I think that the theory that's put forth is to save embarrassment to the administration. But it's not even a secret anymore that Halliburton was doing business with Saddam, while Dick Cheney was president of Halliburton during the Clinton administration in the last four or five years. And that we supplied him. I mean, he was our monster. So I don't think that there's that much to hide anymore. Thanks for the call, though, Amanda. Interesting thought. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Didn't think you could still get union-made clothing in America? Well, think again. It's here, now, in just a mouse click away at www.nosweatshop.com, the world's first shopping mall that doesn't sell clothing made in sweatshops. At nosweatshop.com, there's jeans and oxfords, sweats and hoodies, fleece jackets and sports bras, caps, scarves, and more. You can get great quality, support good jobs, and pay a fair price. You can't stretch a buck any further than that. Nosweatshop.com. A better world is just a mouse click away.
Patriot Seekers, Mike Malloy here. I hope you have a happy and peaceful holiday season.
The upstream migration of some salmon is a spectacular event that's become tainted by chemicals. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Every fall, millions of salmon leave the ocean to swim up rivers in the Pacific Northwest. The fish fight strong currents and hurl themselves over rapids to reach the lakes where they spawn. They die after laying their eggs. It's an exciting time for anglers to be fishing, and it's a feast for a lot of bears and eagles. But new research casts a shadow over this event. The salmon often carry toxic chemicals with them on their journey upstream. Jules Blaise is an environmental chemist at the University of Ottawa, and he studies the movement of chemicals from the ocean into freshwater rivers and lakes. Blaise says ocean water has low concentrations of industrial pollutants, and those chemicals accumulate in the tissues of marine creatures. Salmon consume tiny amounts of PCBs and dioxins every day, and they store those chemicals in their fat. By the time they're adults, salmon can have PCBs in their fat at levels 2,000 times higher than the seawater around them. Blaise says some scenic lakes in the Pacific Northwest receive millions of salmon each year. That many fish can bring in a hefty load of toxic chemicals.
When we looked at how much PCBs these salmon were actually carrying, we were quite surprised to see that in the case of some lakes that receive millions of salmon, the amount of PCBs released by salmon is comparable to the amount of PCBs released by a hazardous waste incinerator. So it's as though you had taken a waste incinerator and placed it on that remote site.
Blaise says most of the chemicals are released directly into lake sediments when the salmon die and decay, but bears and eagles also absorb some of these chemicals when they eat the fish, and Blaise plans to do more research to see how they're affected. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
There's a new voice on IE America Radio Network. It's Never Better with Marina Colby. Sundays from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. Never Better is an energetic show that explores and analyzes how you can be more successful people at work and in relationships. So make sure you tune in to Never Better with Marina Colby every Sunday from 11 a.m. till noon Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to ieamericaradio.com.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Gave yourself up to the mystery and sail the oceans looking for.
And welcome back. You're in the real free speech zone. This is Tom Hartman. No cages, no barbed wire necessary, like the George Bush free speech zones, where they put anybody who has an anti-Bush sign half a mile away from where the event may be. Recapping the news of the week here. It's Friday. TGIF, Shabbat Shalom, Happy Friday. Happy holidays. Happy winter solstice, which happens Sunday night at 11 p.m., more or less. I think 11:14 p.m., the shortest day of the year. And as I recall, the official beginning of winter. And we have, and here in the People's Republic of Vermont, I am looking out at what looks like close to 3 feet of snow. It has really snowed here. It is absolutely incredible. Anyway, Amanda had called, I believe it was Amanda, had called, yeah, with a comment about the conspiracy theories around Saddam. I'll just share with you the conspiracy theories that about Saddam that actually I'm hearing from my sources who have sources in the Middle East that this is the main conspiracy theory that's running around the streets of Baghdad. I can't say with absolute certainty, but from what I consider to be a fairly reliable source. And this conspiracy theory goes, and I'm not trying to attribute credibility to it. It's just this is the one that is being discussed the most, is that Saddam had actually been taken captive sometime earlier, perhaps months earlier, that he had been held drugged and incapacitated by American Special Operations and Special Forces folks. And they were going to hold him until the 2004 election or thereabouts. I mean, you know, this gets pretty bizarre. And or until it was a convenient time to release him. And that he was set up to look bad in the eyes of the Arab world. And that's why there was so much coverage given to the fact that the little kitchen attached to his hidey hole was filled with spam. Did you notice that? Cans of pork, which is something, of course, that no Muslim would go near, and is an American product that, by and large, is not sold in the Middle East. That was a stack of cans of spam that the hidey hole that he was in, and you go back and look at the video and you look at the footage, and this is actually true. The hidey hole he was in, there was no way for him to get out if he wanted to. There was a trap door on the top, and then on top of the trap door on the top, there was a square block, a brick of sorts. It was made out of some fairly lightweight material, and then over that was a rug. It wasn't the kind of thing that you could just push your way out of. He was trapped in there, and so somebody had to let him out. And there was no signaling device. He had no signaling device at all. He had no cell phone. There was no intercom from there up into the building above or anything like that. And so you add all these things up, and the buzz and among the conspiracy nuts in the Middle East, or the conspiracy, I shouldn't call them conspiracy nuts. Actually, among a lot of the average people in the Middle East, is that he was brought out, that he was, you know, held and drugged by us and brought out in a way intended to humiliate him and humiliate the Arabs. And this is these guys you see in the streets who are running around holding up pictures of Saddam. This is the kind of story. This is the kind of, paranoid fantasies that fuel that kind of thing. And again, you think, I mean, if somebody came and took over the United States, as much as I dislike George W. Bush for his political philosophy and dislike his actions in office, he's still the President of the United States. Even though I don't believe he was elected as President of the United States, that he was selected by five out of nine of our Supreme Court justices, nonetheless, he's my commander-in-chief, he's my president. And if Mexico had invaded the United States and George Bush had gone into hiding, as he initially did when 9/11 happened, and his plane flew to three different cities before he settled down there on that morning, and he had gone into hiding, and nobody knew where he was. And then months later, we were under Mexican occupation, and we were in curfews and things, and you know, our companies that we work for were being shut down and were being sold off to wealthy Mexican investors. I mean, just think about it for a minute. I think that there would be something like another American Revolution being prepared. And then if they trotted out George Bush and he looked all disheveled and disreputable and he had been held in a place that had things that were contrary to his stated philosophy. Let's say that they found him in the trap door underneath a porno factory where they're making pornographic videos out in California or something. We would be suspicious about that. I think we would say, you know, come on, give me a break. This is an attempt to set him up, make him look bad. So you can, when you think about it, you know, empathy with somebody in a different culture is a difficult thing, I think, for most people, to actually put themselves in the footsteps of, to put themselves into the mind of somebody in a completely different culture. But when you take the circumstances and you apply them to us, then it's not so difficult to understand why people behave the way they do, why they react the way they do. This is the thing that concerns me so much about this Operation Phoenix thing that I talked about in the first hour of the program. For those of you who've tuned in since then, $3 billion of the $87 billion that was allocated for the rebuilding of Iraq and the continual the ongoing military actions there. Apparently, $3 billion of it is allocated to resurrect or to bring into being a new set of death squads, like we did in El Salvador, like we did in Nicaragua, like we did in like we supported in Chile, like Israel has right now, assassination squad. They don't call them death squads. They have a more sanitized name for them, assassination groups or whatever. Where we would target in Iraq specific people that we didn't like or that we thought were bad or that perhaps actually were bad. Not perhaps. I mean, I'm sure that they will do everything they can to make sure that they're getting people that are actually what they consider to be the enemy, and kill them. And what we've seen from the past times that we've tried to do these kinds of things, and others who have been puppets of the United States, for example, the Shah of Iran had these death squads in Iran, and people didn't like it. In El Salvador, the right-wing death squad supported by the Reagan administration, the people didn't like it. In Nicaragua, I mean, it provoked a popular insurrection. This does not seem to me to be the best way to go about winning the hearts and minds of the people. It's the assumption that there's just a certain limited number of bad people, and if you kill them, then that's the end of them. And all you have to do is look at the situation in Israel right now, the most recent one, to be just, you know, obvious to the world, to see that, yeah, there may be some bad people there, but if you don't use judicial process, if you don't use democracy, then you end up not promoting democracy. If you just go in and assassinate them and there's collateral damage and you kill a few innocent people here and there at the same, it doesn't get rid of the bad people, it creates more. And sometimes it creates more who are even more fanatical than the original ones. I mean, I spent a lot of time in Israel back in the 1970s and 1980s and into the early 1990s, but particularly back in the 70s and 80s. And not just in Israel, I mean, all over the Middle East, but in particular, a lot of time in Israel. A very good friend of mine started what is now one of the largest child care institutions in the country of Israel. And we would go over a lot and visit, and we helped him start out. They were modeling it after a program that we ran in New Hampshire. And I would meet friends over there. I used to take people on tours of Israel. We would go up the West Bank, and we'd go. You know, I know the country very, very well, all from Masada to Carmel. I mean, I know the country, and there wasn't that level in the late 70s. There wasn't that level of hostility and animosity and anger and hatred between the Arabs and the Jews that is going on now, or between the Palestinians and the Israelis would probably be a more correct way to put it. And I just have to say, from having visited many, many times, and of course I am not an unbiased observer, and I am not necessarily an accurate observer, But I think that, the policies of, assassinating people and, the Iron Fist policy of Ariel Sharon is not working as well as the let's try to work this out policy of several of his predecessors. And I think that George Bush following this kind of a policy in Iraq is going to end up being a disaster. And apparently Karl Rove agrees, and this is interesting, that there is, according to this article by Robert Dreyfus in the American Prospect, there is a huge debate raging within the administration. And it's been going on since before the war. You've got the Colin Powell faction, who is in some ways now supported by Karl Rove, who is really the puppet master. I mean, Karl Rove makes the ultimate decisions in the White House, not George W. Bush. And Karl Rove, of course, is the guy who first approached George Bush back when he was a businessman in Texas and said, I want to make you governor. The book Bush's Brain is a just fascinating insight into the relationship between George Bush and Karl Rove and how Karl Rove has molded this the public persona, the public perception of George Bush, both in Texas and in the United States, in a way that was politically useful and acceptable, you know, with some elements of truth to it and also some very significant elements of fiction. But nonetheless, Karl Rove apparently is suggesting, here's the quote. Many in Washington believe that Karl Rove, the White House's political guru, is losing patience with the bungled situation in Iraq. One of the insiders here, Mr. Borstein, says, I have no doubt that Karl Rove is ready to cut and run. And another person who maintains a close contact with the White House and Pentagon officials, Mr. Pletka, says some of the people around the president do want to cut and run, but as she says, but not his foreign policy advisor. So what you've got here is this battle in the administration between the neocons, those who believe that force is the way that you get people to comply. They're using the same psychology that King George III did on the colonies here in North America. They're using the same psychology that Ariel Sharon has. And in fact, you know, we know now that Israel has trained some of our forces in how to deal with insurrections and these sorts of situations. And they're saying, yeah, okay, this is the way to go, the neocons. Use force. And on the other hand, you've got Colin Powell, who all along, by and large, has been saying, you know, this could be a disaster. This could be, you know, this could be a very bad situation. And I was looking here for the quote from Colin Powell. It's a very good one. But anyhow, the point here in this, I encourage you to check this out. It's on prospect.org, the American Prospect, and the article is titled Phoenix Rising, about this. And they point out, but womping is hardly a strategy. In Iraq, the United States is clearly flailing with a trial-and-error approach that seems haphazard and rudderless. Underlying the neocons' worry is a nagging concern that Bush, who sided with the neocons by launching the global war on terrorism and by going into Iraq, could abandon them for some form of cut-and-run strategy in order to protect his reelection efforts. And it's gonna be real interesting to see how this thing plays out. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you'd like to call. Kent in Illinois is on the line. Hey, Kent, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
I'm great. Happy Friday.
Same to you. Hey, Tom, I don't know about Karl Rove wanting to cut and run. I mean, I think he was the orchestrator of this to start with. I think Karl Rove was concerned that Bush needed two things for re-election. A second tax cut a la the reciprocal of read my lips, no new taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And he needed an ongoing popular war that would not be over before the election, unlike Daddy had.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that there's a consensus that that's the case. But this article and others I've read in you know, pretty thoughtful policy and analysis type magazines and publications are suggesting that Rove is starting to get worried that it's not going the way they thought it would go, that it's not going according to plan. And they've just sent two guys in, you know, to take over from Paul Bremer. and run the show. This is an interesting another thing.
Well, they didn't have a strategy for what to do once we got there. That's what
right.
the problem is. Another thing I've been thinking about, this debt forgiveness of these foreign countries and foreign institutions to Iraq.
Right.
We are wholesale selling off Iraqi companies, most of which, are held by the government.
Yeah. We've got about 30 seconds, Kent.
Okay. If we sell those, when we sell those off, if these loans are forgiven, these loans are going to be forgiven to the Iraqi government / companies that American companies are going to buy that won't have any debt burden. We're giving more money to our companies who are going to buy these companies that won't have any debt burden. That's what it's
sure.
all about.
Yeah, it helps out Bush's campaign contributors at the bottom line. You got your finger on it, Kent. Well said. This is Tom. Thank you for the call. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
Mom, I think it's time we had the talk.
Oh, dear. We did that years ago. Remember I used the fruit basket?
Mom, remember when I introduced you to pedicures and power shopping?
That was dope.
Dope, Mom.
Oh, yeah.
Now you're going to learn how to feel like a goddess.
Let me get the fruit basket.
Mom, listen. For the holidays, I'm getting you a Venus razor. You get the closest shave and silky smooth skin.
That sounds ripe.
Fresh, Mom.
Let the women in your life in on the secret of the Venus razor. Venus from Gillette. Reveal the goddess in you.
Quick question. Ever had a cold that only lasted 4 hours? Anybody? Then why take a 4-hour cold medicine? Instead, take a Leave Cold and Sinus. One pill has the strength to give you 12 hours of relief. No stuffy nose, no throbbing head, all day. So what's it going to be? 12 hours of relief or symptoms that interrupt your day? Do I really need to ask?
Try non-drowsy Aleve Cold and Sinus. One pill, 12 hours of relief. Use as directed.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. I have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will. Thanks.
The Tom Hartman Show.
JR in Victorville, California is on the line.
In California, there's a group called California Budget Project. They did a survey on the hourly wages for all groups, public and private. The highest paid group in California on an hourly wage base is government employees. They average $20 an hour. Well, in all industries, it's $15.38, so they're $5 an hour over the average worker in California. But the thing that doesn't make sense to me is if we're in control of the government, they not only get to tell them what to do, do, they make more money than he does. It doesn't sound like we're in control at all, does it?
What this has demonstrated is the benefit of unionization for government employees. And you and I together, JR, we should be working to provide those kinds of unionized benefits to all people in all industries in America so that everybody can make as much as the people in that fully unionized industry of California government employees makes.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Suzanne Gowardy.
I'm El Bracciacci, the famous mariachi.
Whatever.
This is Renee Scarponi.
Hey, baby.
This is Kim Kasnick.
Yeah, baby.
This is John Lucas.
Hey.
This is Stephanie Stryker.
Yeah, bud.
This is Steve Damschutter.
This is Shaw Jones.
This is Bill Vellner.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Ron Metzinger.
From our family, cheers. Have a
happy holiday and a great new year.
Isn't that just too cute?
I like Santa Claus.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network. Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Christmas jams at the tunnel, shop through hustle and bustle. Snow and lights make Wonderland out this concrete jungle. There's miracles on 34th Street. On a train, get that lady with all them bags you see. Radio City for the Christmas show.
Yes, happy holidays. Our program today produced by Louise Hartman here in Vermont. Music edited by Brad Walrod in New York City. Our program engineered in Detroit by Steph Stryker and Steve Damschroeder. Thank you both very much for a marvelous day, and thank you for to the folks in particular in our chat room who've been hanging out, offering moral support, and just got some really interesting URLs posted in there. Fascinating stuff. Leland in Santa Fe is on the line. Hey, Leland, we've got a few minutes left. Welcome to the program.
Oh, okay. Well, I only tuned in. I'm home, not feeling well. I haven't heard you before, but I'm really touched and disturbed by this idea of a death squad problem here, which is what I'm really sad about.
I think it's the wrong way to go, too.
How did you? I didn't get the first part of your comment. How did you come to that knowledge of a squad?
Well, it's not a secret. The best article about it that I've seen is one in the current issue of the American Prospect magazine.
Okay, I'll look for it.
Which is prospect.org on the web.
I had a man in the first Gulf War. A man here in Santa Fe used a phrase that stunned me at the time. He said, and I think it applies now as things like this start to come to light, that this could be turning into and has already perhaps turned into a war of evil against evil, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's just nobody's really the good guys anymore.
Yeah, it's a tragedy, and it will be a tragedy if it really, really becomes that way. The moment that the Iraqi people begin to perceive us as oppressive occupiers rather than liberators, we're doomed. I mean, there is no recovering from that other than replacing us with somebody else. And there are a lot of people suggesting that that moment has already come and gone.
Newsweek or Time had a short page on this called "It's Over." The war for minds and hearts is over.
Yeah.
I mean, that's even in these mainstream press pieces.
Yeah, and this is why today Robert Novak in the Sun-Times, the right-wing columnist, the guy who outed Valerie Plame, writes, "The inadequate, unrealistic planning for the occupation of Iraq will never be admitted publicly, but it's common knowledge at high levels of the administration." He talks about how they're sending in two guys to take over from Paul Bremer. We'll see what happens. Leland, thanks for the call. We got to go. That's the end of the show. Thanks all for being with us today. Thank you for joining us. Tune in again on Monday, same time, same place. This is Tom Hartman. I'll see you then.
From a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly disorder from sirens night and day, from the fire.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
I would like to see a law that says you, your organs automatically get donated unless you say no.
All right, Richie, have you got an organ donor specification?
No.
Why?
Because I don't want them taking me before I'm dead.
In Richie's case, what good would most of those organs be?
Certainly won't be going for his brain. Or they might, because it's never been used.
You might as well be dead. Your brain is, so why not the rest of you?
On the IE America Radio Network.
Animal Talk, not...